This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The Senate has passed a major rescue plan put forward by the administration to help revive the country's economy during the COVID-19 pandemic. China says its exports recorded their fastest annual growth in over two decades during the first 2 months of the year. Nationwide protest rallies against the recent military coup in Myanmar escalate despite deadly crackdown. Good everyone, welcome to World News here in the Iranian capital. I'm your host, Bashar Sajafi. Good to have you with us. Starting with developments in the U.S., the Senate has passed a major rescue plan put forward by the administration to help revive the country's economy during the COVID-19 pandemic.
The yeas are 50, the nays are 49. The bill as amended is passed.
Party line vote saw no Republicans vote for the $1.9 trillion package. The sweeping legislation heads back to the House of Representatives. The Democratic majority chamber is expected to adopt the relief package, making it one of the largest stimulus plans in U.S. history. President Joe Biden hailed approval as a giant step toward reviving America's pandemic-stricken economy.
When we took office 45 days ago, I promised the American people that help was on the way. Today, I can say we've taken one more giant step forward in delivering on that promise that help was on the way. This plan puts us on a path to beating the virus. This plan gives those families who are struggling the most the help and the breathing room they need to get through this moment. This plan gives small businesses in this country a fighting chance to survive.
The legislation would send out $1,400 stimulus checks to most Americans. It allocates $350 billion to state and local governments. The bill also provides $49 billion for COVID testing and $14 billion for vaccine distribution. The coronavirus pandemic has left more than 500,000 people dead out of 29 million cases in the U.S. Well, we've got breaking news for you. Palestinian media saying that the Israeli forces have targeted Palestinian fishermen boats in Gaza, killing three of them. That's what has been going on every now and then. There are strict restrictions on fishing. That's the lifeline of many Palestinians in that part of the occupied territory. And now we have this news out that three of them have got killed. Now, Professor of Economics Steve Keen believes that more should have been done to help Americans through the pandemic.
It's certainly good that it's been done. More should have been done because the real impact of the COVID on the average working American is that their cash flow has dried up, but their financial commitments still remain. So if you look at what that's meant to households in America, everybody's focusing on a so-called increase in the savings rate. That is actually just an artifact of the definition of savings as output minus consumption, where consumption has fallen more than output. But the actual level of household debt in America has risen by about 4 or 5% of GDP. So households are borrowing money just simply to keep on paying their bills. And this will go some way towards addressing that, but not the full distance.
Now over to China. The country is saying that its exports recorded their fastest annual growth in more than two decades during the January-February period. China's customs data shows exports jumped by more than 60% in the first 2 months of the year compared to a year earlier. The surge is fueled by a rebound in foreign demand, and this as manufacturing gets back on its feet in major economies, including the U.S. and the EU. Economic activity in China was battered by the coronavirus pandemic early in 2020. and that's led outbound trade to nosedive by 17%. China has largely weathered the pandemic ever since. Now, to get some insight on this from Beijing, I'm joined by Anar Tangen, who's an author and columnist. Good to have you with us, sir. So in this hard economic times, what factors do you find responsible for this big growth in Chinese economy?
Well, there's two factors. From a numerical point of view, remember, we're starting with from a very low base. This year, this period last year, 2020, the deficit with the U.S. in terms of imports was about $7 billion, and the total surplus, I should say, was $7 billion. This 2 month period, it's over $100 billion. So it's due to the last, obviously, China shutdown. But on the other side, China produces a tremendous number of intermediate goods and also essential goods. You know, you have to have clothing, you have to have shoes, you have to replace furniture. And there's a lot of intermediate parts that go into U.S. Production. So as the U.S. ramps up, its appetite for Chinese components increases. So this will continue as long as the economy starts to build in other parts of the world and as long as people need PPE and other things.
Mr. Tangen, how long do you think it will take for other parts of the world, including the EU and the U.S., to go back on track and see full recovery and rebound?
Well, that's difficult to say. Right now, the issue is COVID-19 and the health response. Until you have a robust health response that is able to bring not only the situation with the pandemic in control in the EU and U.S., but worldwide, until that happens, you cannot estimate the extent of the damage, nor can you say that there's going to be a resumption. The fact is, there's a global supply chain. Materials that are coming from Africa, South America, Australia, etc., and then there are production bases in China. There's demand in Europe and the United States. These things are all interrelated. This myth that somehow one part can lead the other parts is wrong. I mean, China is benefiting now because it's really the only economy in full-scale operation due to its ability to handle the pandemic. Right. But, you know, the world, the GDP shrunk by 4.4% last year worldwide, and eventually that will have an effect on existing manufacturing.
I appreciate your comments and insights. Anar Tangen, author and columnist, joining me from Beijing. Anti-coup ralliers have once again hit the streets across Myanmar to demand civilian rule. The largest rally took place in the second city of Mandalay. Protests in half a dozen cities were peaceful. In some locations, though, police reportedly used tear gas and stun grenades to disperse the ralliers. Locals in the largest city, Yangon, also said that soldiers stormed several districts, making arrests. The latest rallies took place despite a military crackdown that the UN says has killed at least 50 people so far. Myanmar's army seized power on February the 1st and detained civilian officials, including de facto leader Aung San Suu Kyi. Protests have been going on since then. Brazil is imposing new COVID restrictions in its most populous cities as the country is suffering a new surge of the pandemic. In Sao Paulo, a new lockdown is in place, while officials in Rio de Janeiro introduced new restrictions, including a nighttime curfew. Several businesses in Rio have also been ordered to either close early or shut down altogether. And this while coronavirus deaths in Brazil are nearing 263,000 out of 10.9 million confirmed cases. The figure is the world's second highest death toll from the pandemic. Meantime, the U.S. remains the world's worst hit, with 29 million confirmed infection cases and more than 524,000 deaths. Paraguay's President Mario Abdo Benitez has announced a cabinet reshuffle amid unrest over his government's COVID response.
As president, my job is to serve our people. I'm aware that people are hoping for change, and I'm going to make them. That is why I have informed the entire cabinet that they will be relieved of their posts in the coming hours. Decrees for new appointments will be published.
Benitez called for greater participation and dialogue to correct mistakes. He also condemned acts of violence. Paraguay's president has faced calls to step down over his response to the pandemic. People hit the streets of the capital, Asunción, on Friday, blaming him for worsening the situation. Security forces fired rubber bullets and tear gas to break up the rally. Several people were injured as a result. Paraguay's COVID crisis has already forced the resignation of the health minister. The country has so far reported 166,000 COVID cases and 3,200 deaths. The vaccination program has been hampered by delays in the arrival of the jabs. France has extended the weekend lockdowns to its northern parts of the country as it's struggling to contain the outbreak of the COVID-19. The measure now puts more than 2 million people across the country under the weekend restrictions. The pandemic has killed 88,300 people across France, one of the highest death tolls in Europe. In some countries, COVID restrictions brought people to the streets. In Austrian capital, protesters demand the resignation of Chancellor Sebastian Kurz. Many of them did not wear masks or observe social distancing. In Sweden, people rallied in the capital in defiance of a government ban on large gatherings. 6 police officers were injured in scuffles with the protesters. Pope Francis has started his tour of northern Iraq on the final leg of his historic visit to that country. The Pope began his tour with a visit to the city of Erbil. He then went to Mosul, the former stronghold of the Daesh terror group in Iraq. Security has been tighter than Mosul, where the Pope will lead a prayer for the victims of war. He will again in Erbil. He will be in Erbil again on Sunday afternoon when he will celebrate Mass. Pope Francis started his trip to Iraq on Friday, marking the first papal visit to that country. He has met with Iraqi top Shiite cleric, Grand Ayatollah Ali Sistani. The two sides have called for peace. Israel is facing an ICC probe into war crimes committed in the Gaza Strip and the West Bank. The investigation includes Palestinian deaths in the 2014 war on Gaza and March of Return rallies, as well as Israel's illegal settlement activity. Tel Aviv's close ally, Washington, has expressed opposition to the probe, saying that the Hague-based court does not have jurisdiction over the matter.
The United States remains on a collision course with the International Criminal Court, even after the administration of former U.S. President Donald Trump yielded power to the Joe Biden administration, which was expected to be softer on issues related to international organizations. The reasons for the troubled relations have remained unchanged: the ICC's decision to probe war crimes committed by the United States and Israel. ICC Chief Prosecutor Fatou Bensouda, who has been probing war crimes committed by Israel, the U.S., and their allies, said in December 2019 that such crimes have been or were committed in the West Bank and the Gaza Strip. She named the Israeli military, which has for years unleashed a reign of terror on Palestinians, as the perpetrator of war crimes. The ICC prosecutor further noted that there was a reasonable basis to launch a probe into Israeli military actions in the besieged Gaza Strip, as well as illegal settlements in the occupied West Bank. Bensouda then asked judges to rule on the extent of the court's jurisdiction in the case, and the court last month established that it had jurisdiction. The announcement was not received well by Washington and Tel Aviv. U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris told Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in a phone call that the U.S. opposes any such probe as the court has no jurisdiction over the matter. The phone call followed U.S. State Secretary Antony Blinken's statement that Washington firmly opposes and is deeply disappointed by the decision. The U.S. and Israel have repeatedly shown their opposition to being held accountable for their actions over the years.
The ICC's opening up a formal investigation into war crimes in the occupied Palestinian land is a welcome move, but will it actually translate into action on the ground? For instance, the ICC also opened up an investigation into American troops' war crimes in Afghanistan. The U.S., however, blocked the inquiry, putting the investigation on hold. Now, the ICC jurisdiction plays an important role here. It does need the cooperation of the authorities to be able to investigate the crimes. Yet in case of Israel, how can this even make a difference? After all, Israel commits crimes and violates international law in the occupied Palestinian territories almost on a daily basis.
The ICC, which has often sought to expose war crimes committed by the Israeli regime and the U.S. around the world, has faced bullying and intimidation from both Tel Aviv and Washington. The Trump administration imposed sanctions on the Hague-based tribunal staff last year, targeting them with asset freezes and travel bans, accusing them of violating the U.S. national sovereignty by launching a probe into war crimes committed by the U.S. troops in Afghanistan. The Biden administration took no immediate action to reverse the move, despite promising to put overruling Trump's damaging measures on top of his agenda. The new U.S. administration did announce it would rejoin the United Nations Human Rights Council, which its predecessor withdrew from 2018, citing an anti-Israeli bias, but it said upon re-engaging with the UN body, it will press to eliminate a disproportionate focus on its Israeli ally.
I mean, this shows essentially from the beginning that they're not going there really for human rights. They're going there to secure and support Israel and to bury their war crimes and to get people away from holding the Israeli regime accountable. I mean, why is there all these resolutions in the first place against Israel? Obviously because there's continuous developments, there's continuous war crimes, there's continuous bombardments, there's continuous blockades, there's continuous crimes.
We will be back. And I'm a man of my word. America's back. I speak today as President of the United States at the very start of my administration, and I'm sending a clear message to the world. America is back.
Joe Biden has repeated this sentence multiple times since becoming president, taking a veiled sideswipe at his predecessor's isolation foreign policy and promising a return to multilateralism in a bid to win over the estranged U.S. allies and revive the frosty transatlantic relations. While Washington's European partners have largely expressed support for his administration, divisions between them still persist. In the latest example, an EU spokesperson said, "The bloc supports the ICC as an independent and impartial judicial institution with no political objectives to pursue." Peter Stano was responding to a request for comment on Netanyahu's recent diatribe against the court, who had blasted the war crime probe as, quote, "the essence of anti-Semitism." President Biden says he will bring back what he calls America's moral leadership in the world. The question is, how can the U.S. advocate such leadership while it continues to penalize those who work to expose crimes instead of the true culprits?
Iran's international Quran competition is a major event that's held every year in this country before the holy fasting months of Ramadan. This year, however, the event is held online due to the pandemic. Yusuf Jalal reports.
Voices of Divinity. These ear-soothing voices narrate divine verses from the Holy Book of Quran. The recitations come as part of the 37th International Quran Competition, based in Iran. 57 finalists from 26 countries are competing in the annual contest, which was held online this year due to the pandemic.
This year, the contestants send us recordings of their recitations. Those recitations then are broadcast live on the IRIB Quran channel, and the judgment is carried out by our selected jury members at the same time. This is a brand new style in holding the competition. All other similar Quranic events are cancelled as a result of the pandemic.
411 participants from 67 countries took part in the primary stage of the competition. 122 contestants made it to the semi-final stage. Participants compete in three different fields of recitation: memorization and interpretation.
Listening to the verses of the Quran through the beautiful voice of Quran reciters gives you better peace and spirituality. Such recitations permeate the depths of your heart and connect you to God. That is why the tradition of recitation is still extant today and has many followers.
There is a verse in the Holy Quran that says, "Verily, in the remembrance of God do hearts find rest." And the reading or reciting the divine verses of the Holy Book truly makes you remember your Creator and help you find peace.
The Endowment and Charity Affairs Organization, which organizes the Quranic event, says the motto of this year's edition is "One Book, One Ummah." It says the ultimate goal of the event is to unite the Muslim community based on the teachings of the Holy Book of Quran.
Not all Muslims can recite the Holy Book of Quran as perfectly as contestants here do. But every Muslim family has the Holy Book in their houses to read it and ponder the messages embedded in its verses. Messages that Muslims here say boil down to this key instruction: follow the path of righteousness. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
a diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Could you tell a little about yourself?
I'm Eric Shumanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old and I'm a student of physics. My dad, who is an Indian artist.
Listeners special.
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and welcome to this week's edition of Listeners Special on this beautiful Sunday, March 7th, 2021. I'm Atef Erfani hosting this program today. Listeners Special is the Sunday program where your views are read through emails and letters. So contact us and tell us what you think about our broadcast. Or if you have any messages for our dear listeners around the world, then record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard. Remember, dear listeners, Listeners Special is your program. It's your views that are important. Welcome back. This is Listeners Special, and as usual, many of you have taken the trouble of sending us reception reports. These reception reports, as you may know, are very important and useful to us, especially to our technicians and engineers in IRIB English Radio. These reception reports enable us to provide a better service to our dear listeners throughout the world. All of you who have sent in a reception report will be receiving a QSL card from IRIB English Radio. However, these days, with the outbreak of coronavirus, unfortunately, we can't send you a paper QSL card. As you may know, sending any material, including paper QSL cards or any other items on behalf of our radio is temporarily halted due to the pandemic. So please be patient until we get back on track and until the disease is over, and then we can send you the paper QSL cards as before. However, my colleagues in IRIB English Radio are preparing and designing e-QSL cards in the time of the pandemic. So you can wait for them. And here, I truly appreciate those of our listeners who have kindly sent us reception reports, including Giovanni Seri from Italy, Abdul Alim from India, and Konstantin Marsenkov from Russia. Giovanni, Abdul Alim, and Konstantin, we want you to know how much we value your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio. And about the letters and emails, a zillion thanks to those of our listeners who have kindly sent us emails and letters from around the world, including Mahmoud Sarkar from Shetu Radio Fan Club in Bangladesh. Mahmoud Sarkar is one of our regular listeners. Also, we have an email from Lithuania. This letter is from Desiogas Greblionas. It's such a hard name. Sorry if I mispronounce your name, Desiogas from Lithuania. Also from Brazil, we have an email from Fabricio Andrade Silva. From Germany, we have an email from one of our regular listeners, Ronald Hagensen. And the last but not the least is an email from R.B. Kumar from India. Thanks a lot. Dear listeners, after a short break, I will be back with all these kind letters and emails from around the world. Stay tuned, please. Welcome back. First of all, we have an email from Mahmoud Sarkar. As he said, this is from Shetu Radio Fan Club in Bangladesh. Mahmoud Sarkar is one of our regular listeners who says, "Hello, dear IRIB English Radio. At first, take my salam to all of your staff. Hope you're doing well by the grace of God. I am an old listener of IRIB English Radio. After a long time, I am glad that I've started writing letters to you again. After receiving a reply to the letter I sent you in the listeners' special program, I decided to send you this email to let you know that we will be with IRIB English Radio forever, inshallah. As an old listener of your radio, I have to say that I totally agree with the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei's stance regarding Iran nuclear deal with the Western countries. Because I have seen how Western countries, including the United States, have imposed an economic embargo on Iran, which is grossly unfair. Then Iran is moving forward without bowing to anyone and any country. I respect Iran and the Iranian people so much. I wish you all the best. First of all, Mahmoud Sarkar from Bangladesh, salam and greetings to you and your fellow countrymen, and lots of gratitude for writing this email to IRIB English Radio. Yes, we read all our listeners' letters and emails from around the world, and now it's your take. And no one is left behind, as you may know. And Mahmoud Sarkar from Bangladesh, thanks a lot for your notion on Iran and its stance against some Western countries. Your notion is totally appreciated. We also respect our listeners' notions and views in different spheres, in different developments about the world. And Mahmoud Sarkar from Bangladesh, again, thank you for writing this email to IRIB English Radio. In your upcoming emails, please tell us your views about our broadcast. Wish you all the best. And from Lithuania, as I read, Desiogas Greblionas from Lithuania has sent us an email. Desiogas says, "Hello, dear friends, and I am sorry for such delay in replying your email. I'm interested in different countries and their cultures, and shortwave radio is one of the instruments to get familiar with various cultures. I do also want to visit Iran once the pandemic is over. Your country seems to be an amazing jewel of Asia. Kind regards and stay safe." Salam and greetings from Iran and IRIB English Radio to Desiogas from Lithuania. Many thanks for writing this email to IRIB English Radio. Yes, as you noted in your email, shortwave radio and, of course, traditional radio is one of the instruments to get familiar with various cultures and countries around the world. And as you've mentioned, we have different programs about our country, Iran, in IRB English Radio, which you can choose and listen to them. We also hope that you visit Iran once the pandemic is over. Wish you all the best, Desiogas Greblionas from Lithuania. Desiogas, we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon in the future. And in your upcoming emails, please tell us which programs you like the best. Thanks a lot. Write to us soon. Dear listeners of Listeners Special, after a short break, I will be back with other emails and letters from around the world. Welcome back. Here we have an email from Fabricio Andrade Silva from Brazil. Fabricio says, "Dear friends in IRIB English Radio, greetings from Brazil. I just wanted to remind you via this email to send me a QSL card and that you do not need to send it via postal system. Just fill it up with my reception report information and send me a photo of it here by email. I will be glad for that. Thanks, and have a nice day." Salam and greetings to you, Fabricio Andrade Silva from Brazil, and warm thanks to you for sending us this email. Of course, my colleagues in IRIB English Radio are designing eQSL cards for you, and we'll send them to our dear listeners in the future so that there won't be any need, as you said, to send you the paper QSL card via postal system, which, as you may know, is this trend is stopped because of coronavirus restrictions around the world and because of postal system restrictions. Anyway, we wish you all the best. Keep in touch with us and tell us your views about IRIB English Radio programs. Wish you all the best. Stay healthy and safe. Also from Germany, we have an email from Ronald Hagenson. Ronald Hagenson from Germany, one of our regular listeners, says, "Dear friends, it's a great pleasure to listen to your programs here in Bremen, Germany, in the late afternoon hour. It's my hobby to listen to radio worldwide on medium and shortwave. This is my second attempt to listen to IRIB English Radio. I hope to continue our correspondence and would be very pleased if you confirm my reception report with your detailed verification letter or card. With the best wishes and regards for IRIB English Radio." Greetings to you, Ronald Hagenson from Germany. And it's also a great pleasure for us to have you as a listener who lives in Bremen, Germany. And as you said, it's your hobby to listen to shortwave radio or medium wave radio. Okay, keep up the good work and keep this correspondence going on. Write to us soon and tell us your views about our broadcast. And about the verification letter or QSL card, as you may know, soon in the future, we will send our dear listeners eQSL cards, and that is because of the coronavirus restrictions. Wish you all the best, Ronald Hagenson from Germany. We are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. Okay, dear listeners, after a short break, I will be back with other emails and letters from around the world. Stay tuned, please. You just heard a piece of Iranian traditional music, And the last but not the least email is from RB Kumar from India. RB Kumar from India says, "Dear friends at IRIB English Radio, I want to say that please register my name in your mailing list and send me all types of materials by your radio service, time to time, like magazine, QSL card, program guide, and many more. I am a philatelist and I collect used postage stamps and all types of postal materials which carry stamps like postcards, envelope, etc. I hope you will send me materials and help me collect stamps. First of all, salam and greetings to you, RB Kumar from India, and lots of thanks for sending us this email. You requested registering your name in our mailing list and sending you materials of IRIB English Radio, like souvenirs of here. Of course, I inform my colleagues about registering your name in our mailing list. What about your request about sending you souvenirs of IRIB English Radio and also QSL card? As we have mentioned several times during our program, this trend, of course, is not possible during the coronavirus pandemic, but we can send you eQSL card in the future because our colleagues are designing and preparing such QSL cards for our dear listeners. Of course, IRIB English Radio had the tradition of sending our dear listeners what you've requested, like magazines, paper QSL cards, postcards that had the pictures of Iranian monuments, and they were so beautiful. But now this trend is stopped because of the restrictions of the postal system, international postal system, because of coronavirus pandemic. We hope this virus is eradicated very soon in the future. Anyway, this interaction with you and us in IRIB English Radio, RB Kumar, should keep going on. So we are waiting for your email and your views about IRIB English Radio broadcast. And here we wrap up this week's edition of Listeners Special, the Sunday program. Keep in touch with IRIB English Radio and have a good time.
Listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We'll be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send your emails to EnglishRadio@irib.ir. That is one word, EnglishRadio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at www.pasttoday.com/en. Our phone number is 00982122013720. Once again, our phone number is 00982122013720. Our profile is also in Facebook. Our address is www.facebook.com/pasttodayenglish. Thank you all for being with IRIB English Radio.
the debate.
Hello and welcome to Debate. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, the Hazara people originated in Afghanistan and some migrated to other countries in the region. They have faced much persecution in Afghanistan as well as in Pakistan. And it doesn't seem to matter which government comes to power in Kabul or Islamabad. The bloodshed and oppression of the Hazara continues. Why? Well, stay with us on this debate as we take a look at this question and others analyzing the state of affairs of the Hazara minority community.
At least seven members of Afghanistan's persecuted Hazara ethnic group have been brutally murdered. The killing occurred near the eastern city of Jalalabad, close to the Pakistani border, last week.
There is a plaster factory in this area. Hundreds of our Hazara brothers are coming here and work as laborers. Last night, some unknown gunmen attacked the factory and murdered seven innocent laborers. First, they had their hands bound behind their backs, and then they were killed in different parts of the factory. I think each one was shot by one bullet.
The victims were migrant laborers from the Hazara community, which makes up some 20% of the Afghan population. No one has claimed responsibility for the attack on the Shia minority that has long been persecuted by extremist groups.
We are sad about the attack. We don't know why it's happening. The government doesn't care for us. If we keep weapons for our safety, the government confiscates our weapons, and we don't know what to do. The incident happened, and these poor people were martyred, and the enemy is not known.
The Hazaras have increasingly taken the brunt of rising violence across Afghanistan, with militant suicide bombers attacking their mosques, schools, rallies, and hospitals. The Hazaras have long been persecuted for their faith. They are even being targeted outside Afghanistan. In January, 11 Hazara coal miners were slain by Daesh terrorists in the Pakistani city of Quetta. Miners were kidnapped by gunmen from a remote colliery before being taken to nearby hills, where most of them were shot dead. Some others were beheaded. The killing prompted massive protests across Pakistan. Mourners refused to bury the dead for days, calling for justice, something they have been demanding for decades. Although the governments of both Afghanistan and Pakistan have time and again promised to protect the Shia minority group, the Hazaras are still easy targets for extremist groups. They've had a few allies in Afghanistan over the generations. They say even if peace finally comes to Afghanistan, their chance of living in peace is very slim unless the Afghan government protects the Hazaras the same way it protects other Afghan communities.
I'd like to welcome my guests to the program out of London from the Islamic Human Rights Commission, Reza Qasim, and out of Toronto, journalist and analyst Faya Sahak. Thank you both for being with us. Well, let's start this off with Reza in London. In your perspective, what is behind the oppression against the Hazara?
I think this is something that we need to recognize, that in terms of what the government is or governments have been doing is very little to actually protect this. There is the idea of creating a sectarian tension within the discourse, within the narrative, within the reality of Pakistan, to make it look target people because of their ethnicity, because of their religious affiliations and so on. So to create and stoke tensions within, for the sake of the politics of Pakistan, which are internationally engineered sometimes from Saudi Arabia. So there is that dimension that's actually going on, as well as the local kind of takfiri, kind of sectarian attitudes that are there, and some of the takfiri killers that are actually allowed to be let loose within Pakistan, and also very little is actually done with regards to what's going on in Afghanistan on this matter.
And Fayez, your take, I mean, we have seen more attacks against the community in Afghanistan. Your perspective about that side of things, why do you think that is the case?
Well, despite the scarcity of data on extent and nature and drivers of such attacks, it seems the that the Shia communities, particularly the Hazaras, are under threat. But I don't agree that Hazaras in Afghanistan are facing more threats than others. It could be right in Pakistan. I traveled to Pakistan, and I also traveled to the tribal areas of Pakistan, and also to Quetta. It's one of the places where you can find more Hazaras. Things are not good there. Hazaras have been repeatedly attacked by the Taliban and other terrorist groups that have sanctuaries, and they are being equipped and trained in those areas, and they have been able to attack such communities in that part of the region. But in Afghanistan, I see that Hazaras have not faced more attacks than others. What's happening in Afghanistan is that all the people of this of Afghanistan have been attacked, and they have suffered a lot, mostly because of the Taliban brutal attacks that they continue to do in major cities of this country. That is the political context of that country. But if you look into the social and socioeconomic situation of Afghanistan, you would see that the Hazaras live now, like many others, in rural communities, and they're faced with conflict and also natural disasters that have prompted a large number of Hazaras and also other local communities coming from different ethnic backgrounds to migrate and get displaced from one location to another. When they get displaced inside the country, they don't have access to basic services, livelihood, and shelter. These drivers prompt them to migrate to the regional countries, including Iran and Pakistan. And then if you look at the migration situation in these two countries, they stay there for a short period of time if they're not accompanied by their families, and they earn some money and they come back, they go back to their country. In others, if they have more of a cash, they go to Turkey and then run to Europe. These are the migration trends and the challenges that the Afghan people are faced with. But I believe that the Afghan government, as well as the regional countries, because Pakistan and Iran are also faced with these migration, irregular migration trends, we can say, and the international community, particularly the United Nations agencies, need to look at these drivers of terrorist attacks very thoroughly and come up with evidence-based programming and policy making.
Okay, well, we will be looking at the international aspect behind this, but Reza, let's look at the attacks themselves. How likely do you think that foreign powers are actually behind a lot of these attacks and oppression?
I think we cannot ignore that particular dimension. I think it needs to be considered as a driver for what's actually going on within this kind of context. I mean, we know that the tool that is being used and weaponized is the tool of sectarianism, of sectarian divisions, and to create and foment strife and sectarian division within the context of Pakistan, within the context of Afghanistan. I think if we ignore this particular driver, we are overlooking a major factor in what's actually going on within this context of Pakistan and Afghanistan, and what's happening to the Hazara community. There's also something that we need to keep very much in mind when we're looking at the policy making steps that the other guest mentioned, that there is a need for both of those governments to protect the citizens of their country. We have seen in the case of Pakistan, for example, that when Imran Khan was not prime minister, and a similar thing happened in Quetta a few years back, going back a few years, he had promised that how dare this kind of thing happen, and security needs to be provided for these people. And yet we see him in the position of prime minister, and very little is actually being done. In fact, if anything, some of those people who are seen to be behind the killings have actually been played around with within the context of the army allowing them free rein to do what they wish to do, and not much being done to rein those people in. And some of those strings are being pulled from Saudi Arabia with the nodding and the wink and nudges and so on from the Western governments to allow this sectarian tension, not just allow, to actually grow the sectarianism and to foment this sectarianism, so that anything that happens within the context of local politics, so something that was touted quite frequently was the fact that the normalization that was going on of Israel within the Middle Eastern countries was something that was very much behind this, to actually force Pakistan to actually go down this route and force Imran Khan to go down this route, that look, we can unleash these forces in your country if you do not actually do something about this particular thing. So we need to keep this in that context, that international dimension of sectarianism. And, you know, sectarianism can go back to how Saudi Arabia was using this back in the 80s in terms of what was going on there.
Okay, well, Fayez, I'm looking at the international side of things, and basically we don't really hear that much about the Hazaras. It's not usually covered in the media. I mean, your perspective about that, why don't we really hear about this oppression that's been going on for so long?
Well, you don't hear about it because you don't hear it from Afghanistan, because, as I mentioned earlier, it's not only the Hazaras that are being attacked by terrorist groups, I would say. You have just recently heard from the United Nations that civilian casualties continue to rise in this country. And now we are talking about Hazaras at a very important time, I believe, that Taliban and Americans are talking about their deal that was signed during when Trump was in the White House. I believe that there would, if we don't fix this deal, there would be more unrest. Let's not forget that they are now talking about an interior
government. Let me just jump in here, Fayez. Let me just jump in here, Fayez, with what you said. So you said if the deal is not fixed, you will hear more of this. So do you think that if the United States and the its allies would leave Afghanistan, we would see a safer Afghanistan? We would see less violence? Is that what you're saying?
Well, if you look at the situation in Afghanistan at the moment, the bulk of military operations are carried out by the Afghan security forces. It's the Afghan military forces that are on the front lines fighting against the Taliban militants. The Trump administration has been able to get American forces inside their military bases. Now, Taliban, based on the terms and conditions of this new deal that they signed with the U.S. government, don't attack American forces, even if they come face to face in Afghanistan. So that is the deal. Mm-hmm. But the problem is that they turned their back on Afghans. Now, back to your questions, what would happen if Americans leave Afghanistan? We now have 2,500 American forces in Afghanistan. We are not worried about the withdrawal of American forces from the region, including Afghanistan, because Afghanistan is not the only country in the region where American forces are based. I would say that if the Taliban are allowed to come and hold more territories and they are not encouraged, or we can say forced, to accept the current political structure and respect the rights in the rights, the basic rights of minorities in Afghanistan, I believe things would get worse, and people should be worried about that. And when it comes to sectarian violence, as Reza pointed out, it's if you look at the yes, Hazaras were under threat, and it dates back to many years. But it's not only one factor; many social and political factors, the combination of many factors, has led to the rise of such attacks in the region, in Afghanistan, and I can say also in Pakistan.
Well, Reza, let's talk about the other side of things, international community. and putting pressure on these countries to protect this community. Are we seeing that, or what needs to be done in order to make that a reality, or should that be a reality in your perspective?
I think one of the things that we need to recognize within the narrative and the discourse that we actually have about American meddling in Afghanistan or in other countries, or Western meddling in Afghanistan or in other countries, that it's not been, the situation has not been helped. Things haven't got better. Things have actually got worse. So I think the first thing that would be useful is for American and Western meddling within Afghanistan and other countries of that region to actually stop. And I think the way that forward is for actually regional countries to actually try and work out the best way to actually move forward within this
context. Reza, sorry to interrupt you. I just want to see what you're saying also. So are you saying that actually if American forces and American influence is less in this region, for example, we're talking about Afghanistan or Pakistan and other countries, you feel that regional countries are strong enough to protect themselves and its minorities, or explain exactly what you're saying.
So, for example, in terms of the people who are going to be getting the armaments and so on, where are they getting the armaments from? We have long history documented. Secretaries of State of the United States and so on
they're
and so forth.
They're getting it from Pakistan,
how they armed
you're making up the story
people
in Afghanistan
and so on.
Pakistan,
this
Pakistani
was
government
very much something that was part
and
parcel of what was actually
terrorists.
Going on
not
within this context.
Washington's
so we need to try and make sure that this
okay.
is
Let me just jump in here, Reza, because I'm not sure you could hear Fayez. I want your comment on what he's saying, because Fayez is saying that they're getting it from Pakistan. They're getting the arms from Pakistan.
Oh, Pakistan is one vehicle, absolutely. I don't disagree with that at all. But ultimately, this Pakistan isn't rich enough, nor has got the, you know, the Pakistani army is a key player, and the direction that it goes in, it is also, you know, it has its own local interests, but it's also, its interests are also allied with the interests of America and Western meddling. I mean, we see that. I mean, historically, we can see that these kind of things were going on. We also have India supplying arms to, you know, what is termed as the Indian Taliban. You know, those kind of regional things are, you know, forces that are at play are definitely there. But the issue is that this has been exacerbated, and these problems have been created and magnified by American presence, by Western meddling, whether it's British Western meddling, French, or whatever you want to call it, in different areas, in order to carry on the colonial project. It's a new colonial project. And we need to keep that history in context, that who is actually benefiting from all of this, because it's not the regional, the people of the region that are benefiting. You know, people are being propped up and kept in power within that region, in certain states, to actually control the population in order that the American and the Western policies and so on will be implemented for the benefit of Western politicians and Western powers and so on and so forth. So we need to keep that context in mind. And this is a long history, centuries-old history of meddling that has actually been going on. And it's something that needs to be recognized that it's still continuing today. It has become more nuanced when it comes from the British, but when it, as far as it, where, how it comes from the Americans, it's more gung-ho and more in your face, but that kind of stuff is still going on there. And we need to say that needs to be rejected. Unless that fundamental policy is adopted by the countries of the region, I'm afraid to say that these problems are actually going to continue. I mean, we've seen that happen.
I'm just about out of time. Let me give the final 30 seconds to Fayez. Fayez, your final comments. Do you think that peace can come to this minority group, and what do you think it will take?
Well, I think that the regional countries, and as well as international community in general, need to support the current Afghan government in order to provide more protection to the Afghan people in all geographical locations of that country. It's not only the Hazaras, it's also other groups